This is episode 44 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
You can't have a kid because then you'd have no excuse. You couldn't be a victim anymore. You'd have to be okay. No one would feel sorry for you.
I do not want people to feel sorry for me.
Well, then how long, Nora? How long before you move past it?
Move past what?
That you lost your kids.
I did not lose them. My kids are not dead. They are gone. They are just gone.
Then you should go be with them.
Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you, so let's talk about G'day Melbourne. Suddenly I'm hidden, it's the darkness of the dawn, and your friends are gone, and your friends won't come, so show me where you fit. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and unfortunately, my darling, I have to concede a point to you.
Oh, my God.
Nora.
Which one?
My darling Nora.
Oh.
Is no longer TV's best girlfriend.
No, she's not. I was telling you, man.
I'm quite upset by this.
I'm glad you are, and I'm glad some of y'all figured it out. Took a while, but girlfriend's a little cray and selfish, and man,
yeah.
Now I know why they were having so much time in the bedroom or wherever they were.
Well, they're just trying to, you know,
cover it up, man. That was her mute button. That was her easy button for Kevin. Whenever things would happen that she didn't want.
Listen, I'll tell you what.
Easy button.
If there's a way to cover up some bad stuff, I think I'll choose that way.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, I will admit, like I just said, that I was wrong.
Okay.
And there are things that I am wrong about. And one of the things is sometimes we forget things from the previous week. And I think it's about time we figure out what we forgot last week. All right, so there was a lot of International Assassin connections last week in Crazy White Fella Thinking.
Yes.
And we actually had this written down, and I know this is the second week in a row that we have said this. I had it written down, I just did not say it, and I don't know why. But Senior, in his story, says he went to Melbourne, and he's like, hey, you know, I'd figure I'd go to the opera and check it out. So got myself a suit and got a ticket to Verdi. And on my way, I ran into this guy who said who wanted me to take God's tongue. He was like, F yeah, man, I'll take God's tongue.
Yes.
Well, wouldn't you know, in International Assassin, as we pointed out during that episode last season, what was playing throughout International Assassin the entire episode?
Yeah, Verdi's Requiem.
Verdi.
Right?
While Junior.
Wasn't that?
Yeah, while Junior was in a suit at the same time. And it's just. Your brain just, you know, like it. Sometimes you feel like they're just going by the seat of their pants, and they're really not. They're just really not. So I was very impressed.
They're never going by the seat of their pants.
No.
This is the best writers in television right now. This is the most creative show in television right now. This is bananas, but it's bananas on purpose.
All right. So now let's get into this week's episode, my darling.
Yes.
What do you got for your Damon rating this week?
I'm back to the Mary loves everything because I love everything about this show. I'm back to 5.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm back to 5 for so many reasons. I, you know, I often talk about this show about how I love these flawed characters, and mm-hmm. I didn't love some things about these characters in this episode. It made me not love a couple of them, but I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that a lot. It took me on a wild ride. Some of it made a lot of sense. A bunch of it didn't. And everybody's connecting. You know, we were nervous about how is Australia going to play a part of this? And how are we going to handle with half of the cast being in Australia and half the cast being in Texas? Hey, cell phones, guys. Cell phones make it work. but I'm loving seeing the pieces starting to really come together. And this is something you said last week,
right,
that as episode four, it's smack dab in the middle. This is what episode and next episode really are going to be, that tip of the roller coaster ride, mm-hmm. before you zip down and you just keep saying, oh, shh.
It's okay. Just say it.
No, I'm not. I'm on Facebook Live and I don't think it's appropriate.
Fair enough. Fair enough. For me, get ready. You ready for this? You want to take a guess at what I'm going to say?
Mm-hmm.
Don't look at the notes. Just take a guess at what I'm going to say. For a number. Come on. No,
I
nothing.
No, I don't know.
Great podcasting right here. Great podcasting. Five.
Welcome to the
freaking
club.
Damons. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you can hear my clapping.
Of course they can.
Five freaking Damons. And the reason why I say that is because, again, as you just pointed out, this is the fourth episode of this season. Everything has finally come together. Now, it doesn't mean that it's been fulfilled yet, but it's now everything has collided.
Yeah.
And it's collided in a huge way.
And I'm hoping that this means that we get five from here on out.
Oh, I'm sure that we will.
You know?
I'm sure that we will. And not only is it in an engineered way, like the way that the season is engineered for five Damons, but it's also story reasons too. This episode had everything. It had anger. It had hatred. It had sadness, happiness, frustration, shock, awe. It had everything. Love.
Mm-hmm.
It had sex. It had everything, and it all came crashing together all at once. And you know, we always talk about on this show, how does the show, like The Leftovers or any show that we podcast about, how does it make you feel? And this episode made me feel literally everything.
I know.
Everything.
Hashtag all the feels.
All the feels. gonna need all the copays for our therapists this week. Well, on Facebook, Angie Graves Lee says, five Damons in excellent episode, but I'm still curled up into a weepy ball of emotions at that breakup scene.
Aww.
Kevin and Nora have to get better and get back together. And don't tell me future Nora / Sarah, otherwise known as not Nora, was all alone. La, 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 la. Hands over my ears. I'm not listening.
Hey, I don't think they should get back together. I'm throwing it out there.
She can still redeem her title as TV's best girlfriend.
No, she can't.
She can. She really can.
She's Honey Badger.
Elizabeth Marie on Facebook says, five Damons, best episode ever so far. I haven't really had a Leftovers episode move me like this one. I don't know what you think, but my goodness, I was crying for Kevin Jr. and how he must have felt, so completely demoralized. I felt sadness for Nora, but I think Kevin nailed it when he called her out on the victim thing and the connection to the Burning Man last week. Wow. Just wow.
Mark Cardenas said, I've heard a lot of people express that Nora has now become the center of the show. I think last night's episode disproved that. She is too far gone.
Mm.
Heartbreaking episode. I am also starting to agree that these physicists are really the guilty remnant, messing with people based on how they denied Nora, who answered opposite of the Burning Man's question in last week's episode. So he's giving it 4.5. I have not yet heard that theory, that the physicists are actually members of the GR. Mm-hmm. Awesome. I have some more theories about that. But for now, let's figure out that title.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
All right, Marvin. This is your segment.
And it's so easy on the show, The Leftovers. G'day Melbourne, of course, is the title of this episode. And it is the pivotal, extraordinary morning TV show.
It's the Today Show.
Yeah, it's the Today
Australia.
Show. It's Good Morning America. It's the road show for all of you who live in Rhode Island. it's It's just your happy-go-lucky morning show that they sprinkled in there that two guys named Kevin have died. That was the one thing that I wasn't cool with, the G'day Melbourne throwing in there, because I'm like, they wouldn't just be like, all right, everybody, we're making pancakes. I can't do Australian. How would I do Australian?
That was like...
That was Southern.
That was like Alabama.
Know. Anyway. How would you do Australian? All right, everybody. No, I can't. I just can't. We're making pancakes. By the way, if your name's Kevin, watch out, you're going to die. Like, that was just a little weird. But
just keep going. Keep trying.
But what I loved is the name of the show is G'day Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it was the most terrible day. Like, for everyone. For everyone. Kevin and Nora broke up. Kevin is seeing dead people again. Mm-hmm. And there's some kind of epic explosion to the likes of a terrorist attack.
Right.
Not a good day for Melbourne. Just throwing it out
well,
there.
Who's to say that it's in Melbourne, by the way?
There were police and firefighters. Well, no matter what, Melbourne is feeling the effects.
Well,
so
it's in so much that there's been a big explosion. We don't know
that
where
there's
yet.
There's a travel ban. All the planes, all the taxis.
Everything's been grounded.
Everything's grounded.
Yes.
So yeah, maybe it's not in Melbourne, but the people in Melbourne are not having a good day. They're not having a good day.
No, not a good day.
No.
Can you say a bidet? Oh, no. No, not a bidet.
They could have a bidet.
That's what cleans you. Which I used one in Vegas once.
Okay, TMI. So now it's time to reheat the leftovers.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
All right, so let's go over the details of this episode. One of the things that you'll notice, actually, it says that it was a teleplay by Tamara Carter, who wrote on The Fosters, a television show, and Forever.
Wait, I don't understand. Teleplay?
Well, I'm going to teach you.
Oh.
And then also written by, well, a teleplay by Haley Harris, who was the writer's assistant for The Leftovers since day one, and is now receiving her first credit.
Congratulations, Haley Harris.
Her first writing credit. So, Haley, this one is for you.
Bam. Just like that. A winner.
Someone should tag her on Facebook.
I know that Haley is a listener. She does listen to our show because I follow and she follows us on Twitter. And we've actually talked many times.
We need to tweet her. Someone needs to tweet in our Facebook Live. Tweet Haley Harris right now.
Yes.
And say, hey, we're talking about you in your episode.
So she is amazing. So someone, please tweet out, whoever's listening live right now, please tweet out to Haley Harris, and hopefully maybe she'll join us on Facebook. The story, however, was by one Damon Lindelof.
No way, in this episode?
So what Mary asked, what is the difference? What does teleplay mean as opposed to story? Now, of course, thank you to Wikipedia. I will say, according to the current Writers Guild of America guidelines, a television script consists of two distinct parts: a story and teleplay. The story comprises basic narrative, idea, theme, or outline indicating character development and action, while the teleplay consists of individual scenes and full dialogue or monologue, including narration in connection therewith.
Okay. So it's the actual script, the enter Kevin.
Yes. So simply put, this distinguishes the contribution of ideas toward the story from the actual writing of the dialogue and stage directions present on the page in the finished product. So, that is the difference. It was directed by Daniel Sackheim. Now, if you know that name, you're a nerd, like all of us.
Stop calling us nerds.
Well, we are nerds. There's nothing wrong with saying that.
Well, you know, I would just, for the rest of the season, why don't you just say you're amazing?
Okay, you're amazing.
Thank you.
Daniel Sackheim has done many television shows, but has a connection with Judging Amy. Lori. Why am I blanking on her name right now?
Lori.
Yes, Lori, the actress who plays Lori. Why am I blanking on her name? Oh, my God. Anyway, he had directed on Judging Amy, House, Longmire on Netflix, and also The Walking Dead and The Americans and Game of Thrones, who he did two episodes last season. He's also directed on Better Call Saul, The Man in the High Castle, and two episodes of
Amy
The
Brenneman.
Leftovers. Amy Brenneman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Facebook Live.
Two episodes of The Leftovers, including this one, and one of my other, I think I gave this one a 5 as well, The Gavis at Their Best, from season 1, the penultimate episode of
nice.
Season 1. So the DP, as always in Australia, is John Grillo. And the song, the theme song this season, or this episode, was by New Hampshire native.
We're not from New Hampshire, but when
I went to school in New Hampshire, yeah. So I still claim it as mine.
And like in New England, you all kind of feel like you're in the same state because yes. You're the size of a same state out west. Like all of us combined.
It's like one. It's like Ohio.
Yeah.
So I still claim him as my own. Manchester's finest, Ray LaMontagne. And the song title was This Love Is Over. Now, I wanted to say some of the lyrics like I did last week to you guys. It starts off, going out of my mind, don't even know my own name half the time. How'd I get so blind that I couldn't see what was right in front of me? I wish I was wrong. I wish that you were right here lying in my arms. Deep down inside, I've got to face the truth that you're not coming home. This love is over. This love is over. God knows I tried everything I could to keep you satisfied. Being my baby was just a part you played. It's all kind of game. So on, so on, so on. You can listen to the rest.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera. So you can clearly see that this is a carbon copy of what is happening to Nora and Kevin right now. So, my love, how are we going? Oh, sorry, I can't say that anymore. I forgot. Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Thank you.
How are we going to attack this episode? And do you have a personal story to share about how you related to this episode? Because I saved you last week.
You totally did. And I dropped the ball. Hold on. Give me a second. Personal. You know, I was trying to think about... what Nora was going through, and she was getting all that medical work done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in such awe of how calm she was.
Right. They even made note of that.
Yeah. Because whenever I have had blood work or tests or anything like that happen, I'm the exact opposite. So that's how I related to this episode in that little bit, at least. Because I was sitting there being like, she's so chill, and yet I've had to download hypnosis tracks. I'm not joking. I've had to listen to hypnosis tracks. I have had to warn people who are drawing my blood, like, just so you know, I pretty much faint. I sob. You're going to have to give me apple juice like a five-year-old after.
Yes, and crackers.
And crackers. So, yeah, I just was amazed, but I could totally have fallen asleep in that makeshift coffin. So I would have been terrible when Nora was great, except when she like totally took a nap inside where she was supposed to be chill. I fall asleep everywhere. Honest to God, everywhere. I have fallen asleep on floors, in cars, trains, planes, automobiles. One of my favorite places that I fell asleep was in a recording studio. My reggae band was having a recording session. Guys, recording studio floors are not clean. But I fell asleep because the only time we could record was like 2 a.m. because we were poor. So I fell asleep there and I was like, you know what? I would have failed at all of that stuff, except I totally would have kept my cool in mm-hmm. the fake casket pretty much thing.
I feel like I'm not sure if I would have been able to do that. I always felt like this story this episode obviously is broken up into two halves. They're running parallel, obviously, between Nora mm-hmm. and Kevin. And we're seeing their journey. It's their journey is separating them apart, you know, it, via all the things that fall within sanity and insanity, and then finally revealing the truths about who they are mm-hmm. deep down inside. You know, for Nora, at the end, she was sad and lonely in her grief, in her anger, in her frustration, how that has now come out to fruition. And she's sitting there alone in a room with what she was smoking, alone again, in the sadness and everything with the water is just washing over her. It what a remarkable scene.
Truly.
And for Kevin finally succumbing to his insanity, perhaps, and succumbing to what his father has been trying desperately to have him follow, because he now has nothing else. And like it was kind of exemplified throughout the rest of this episode, Kevin has kind, as Lori said, has wanted to kind of leave everything behind a little bit here. And he finally does. Mm-hmm. He leaves everything and everybody, including Nora, TV's best girlfriend.
Not.
and leaves her in a hotel alone. And he finally succumbs to that. So through the insanity and the sanity and the overall truths, we get to see who these people really are.
Yeah.
And I think that is really, really exceptional.
So that's how we're going to break today's episode down. Who are these people? Mm-hmm. And really, it is Kevin and Nora. Everyone else, aside from Lori, they're whatevs today. Okay? Like Kevin Sr. came in at the end, gave him a big hug. Welcome back.
Yeah, he had his day the previous week. So we talked enough, I feel like, about him.
John, whatevs right now. Lori, I need to talk about because she's going to be the easiest.
Lori's important.
Yeah, she's super important. Yes. So Lori is still doing this job of maybe making people feel better, maybe lying to people, being in love with John in this really awkward, weird relationship. Knows she needs to take calls from Kevin. I love this relationship that they have where it's like, oh, it's a big deal. He's calling me. And knows right away, oh, Kevin thinks he's talking to a dead person.
Right.
So what this says to me is Lori doesn't believe that Kevin really was speaking to Patty.
That no, God,
she
no.
She thinks that that all was still just a psychotic crazy town. And this is going to be epic when she talks to John, because all of the females do not believe Kevin is special. And Lori right now is the cusp of that. Nora doesn't. Nora's like, oh, do you love your book? Like, whatever. Yeah. Jill doesn't care. Lori doesn't believe in this. All of the men think Kevin is this spiritual creature. They're all buying into the book. Tommy, not so much. Tommy doesn't even know what's going on. Bless his heart. He's not even
Tommy.
There yet. Yeah, Tommy is gonna be the only one that's unscathed right now. But I just thought it was really interesting how right away it wasn't, oh my God, you found Evie. Mm-hmm. What really caught it, of course, was that Facebook page where Evie's face wasn't really there.
Right.
It was just, you know, one of those random fake people.
And what a way for Damon Lindelof and Hayley Harris and Tamara Carter to play with our expectations, because it would be something the Leftovers could accomplish, and it could potentially explain away, if we really wanted it to, that Evie would still be alive. It would still meet our expectation that maybe John was right. Maybe the dental records were faked and she did it before, even though we all knew, we saw that missile in her eye, in like the reflection of her glasses. It was right on top of her. But it would be something the Leftovers could pull off if they really wanted to, by sticking Evie in the show and as a real character. But then turning that completely upside down and having Kevin just kind of project this onto some poor soul.
Bless her heart.
Just chasing around the town.
And how great was she that she like still played around? She was totally okay with it. She was like, oh, I needed to come and talk to you because she told me to. So I have a lot of respect for Lori in her professional sense.
Right.
That, you know, this isn't her patient, obviously. This is her ex-husband. But she knows that he has suffered tremendously in many ways, like psych-wise.
Yeah. She says, you need to indulge that person's delusion and find common ground. Otherwise, it's very likely that person will hurt themselves. And she says later on to Kevin, I don't want you to hurt yourself, Kevin. You know, she still loves him and she still cares for him. She still respects him as a person, regardless of whatever has happened or the fact that she's now moved on and married John. But when she says to Kevin, this isn't real. I didn't cry, but all my eyes, and I could, you know, when you're about to cry, you feel the pressure in your eyes.
Yeah.
You just you almost half expected it, but when she said, "Kevin, this isn't real," and now that I know her name, Amy Brenneman, and I'm not blanking, Amy Brenneman just killed it in this scene because it was 100% real what she was saying, and it was 100% emotionally effective what she was trying to come across, and I couldn't get enough of this. In my eyes, the pressure was building up in my eyes. And I was actually sitting in my office this afternoon watching it. And people, you know, hopefully didn't catch me just, you know, almost crying in my office, because that would have been kind of weird. But oh my God, when she says this isn't real.
You know, I do think it's interesting that she hasn't talked about any of, like, she's so professional. That's why I had to say it right from the beginning. She's not talking about this with John. John, who knows Kevin, John, who they've gone through crazy stuff with over the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she could have easily been like, whoa, you know what else crazy happened? My ex, who isn't really my patient, I could totally talk about. He thought he was seeing a dead person. Like, they haven't talked about any of this stuff. She's just being so great and so protective of Kevin with his emotional needs that I agree. I think she did an excellent job of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I love that he called her and how she said that. You know, you called me. Like, somewhere back in your mind, you knew, uh-oh.
And here The Leftovers is doing it to you again. Mm-hmm. Because you remember last season when Kevin was seeing Patty, we were all convinced that Patty was real, that she was there. And then Lori steps in and says, not so much. You're having a psychotic break. And it gave you just enough doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And then they play the exact opposite this season. You're thinking, oh my God, Kevin seeing Evie. Evie's alive. And then she comes back and says,
I said in a previous episode, though, I was like, nope, she's not going to really come back. And when this happened, I was like, this is a dream. This is something.
Right.
Because it's not real.
Well, that's what I'm saying. In season two, it ended up being that Patty was there for Kevin.
Yes.
But in this season, Evie is not there.
And that's what I think people who like watch the show without discussing it at great lengths like we do need to realize, like, Patty was in some way, shape, or form real.
She was real to Kevin.
This Evie, last night's episode with Evie, not real. Kevin made her up. Kevin projected her on someone else. The whole Patty thing was a totally different thing. Kevin wasn't projecting her on someone else. She was visiting him. It was all this different stuff. However, what I did find interesting was how he saw her in a TV while he was in a hotel room, kind of mimicking International Assassin when he saw his dad through the TV. And she was holding up a sign very quickly. It was
Surah 81, which is a passage in the Quran and refers to in the Quran about Judgment Day. I actually have this all written down.
But I thought it was interesting because I'm like, Kevin wouldn't have known the Quran.
No, but maybe the lady was still actually holding the sign.
Oh.
Right? So he's just projecting her face.
Okay.
Now, it does call into question, is Kevin seeing, like, the...
But Kevin wouldn't have actually gone there. Okay, so that...
I like how he was like, can you hear me?
And she was still just staring. It was pretty epic.
The Surah 81, or if that's not how you pronounce it, I apologize. But it among the verses in it, it says, and when the girl buried alive is asked for what sin was she killed. That is one of the references in there, which is pretty interesting, seeing how Nora is reading what was happening to Kevin in International Assassin as he pushed the little girl and she died, and the girl was alive and then she was dead, she was drowned, and International Assassin, Kevin comes back to life, and
now he looks for a book called Assassin when he's international. Did you catch that?
I love that. He's like, Assassin.
Perfect.
Oh man, just great stuff.
So, huge fan of Lori in this episode. Mm-hmm. There's more of Lori to come. I totally know it. And now that we know that there's going to be potential conflict, let's be real, real conflict between she and John, because they're polar opposites. As I said, go back and realize that female characters, not Grace, but Grace is a liar. She's weird. I don't trust her. But the female characters who are close in Kevin's life are not feeling this, like, you know, this like spiritual stuff, this faith stuff.
Right.
So I think that's all I have to say for Lori, but I just feel like she was really important, and I know that this isn't the end for her story. So I feel like she was one of the three people I had to talk about.
And here's the thing too. Somehow, some way, I feel like Lori now has to have a conversation with John about what went down. Like, you can't not talk about the conversation.
Yeah.
If they're out to dinner.
Yeah.
Like, John's gonna be like, hey, yo.
Why do you keep talking to your ex?
Yeah, and like, I'm not in a jealous way, but like, hey, Kevin, I'm writing a book about this dude.
Hold up. Do you like that she was like, I'll pay for this? First off, you're married. Second of all, you have the same job. Third off, of course you're paying for it, because John shreds his effing money. Lori's the only one that probably holds on to money.
All right. You know, so let's talk about this whole sequence with Kevin seeing Evie, we're going to call her not Evie. Yeah. All right. And
no, we can call her Evie.
No, we can't. We have to call her not Evie because okay. She's not Evie.
You're right. She's not Evie.
So we have not Lily, not Nora, and now not Evie. So he sees her on the television and then he figures out, okay, I have to go see this person. And he comes running over there. And one of the scenes that I really liked that I thought that Daniel Sankheim directed the hell out of, and this might be one of my favorite sequences yet, which is he's running in the alleys and he's surrounded by all of the different graffiti, right? The, you know, tagging, that's what they're calling it. You know, kids these days calling it tagging. And I really loved the juxtaposition of the graffiti in terms of what Kevin was seeing too, because what Kevin is seeing, he's seeing not Evie.
Correct.
But really the person underneath not Evie is this Danya Moabizi. Just like how all the graffiti is surrounding him, is you're seeing all the graffiti on top of it, but underneath it's just plain walls. It's just nothing. It's the other person.
You're getting so deep.
Oh my goodness. And it was beautiful graffiti. And the way that it was directed, it was
gorgeous.
It was gorgeous.
Slash reminded me of when I've gone on those haunted house roller coaster rides in like sketchy parks.
Yeah. Well, that tension.
Yeah.
That tension surrounded and totally enveloped this entire episode. I kept feeling like, what's going to happen next? And that's why it was so visceral, this episode. Yeah. I think this might be one of my favorites.
I would agree.
That The Leftovers has produced, because it just never let up. Whether it was Kevin in search of not Evie, or Nora talking to the people, the scientists, or even Lori speaking to Kevin. Like when she said, this isn't real, I almost thought part of me was thinking that Kevin's not even in Australia. He's still in Texas. You know, and that would be a little over the top. And it would be kind of a little too much like Mr. Robot second season two for me.
No idea what you're talking about, but I'll go with it.
But I would have bought it. I really would have. But the fact that what I'm getting at is it was just so tense, and that is why this episode worked so freaking well. So Kevin thought he saw Evie, whom we all know died in the attack with Meg, that the ATFEC had put on
AFLAC
had put on the welcome center in Jarden. And 3 years later, we are here now. So when he starts thinking that he sees Evie, he's questioning her. He even goes to the library. I love the library clerk is like, she hits the bell. And he's like, this guy's being weird.
Yeah. What librarians have like bouncer bells?
I wish I just had a bell. Oh, wait, I do have a bell. There we go. Sorry, guys. Kevin's being weird right now. And then we have the whole sequence. Could you imagine the horror that this Danya Moabizi is going through? Like, just some American dude.
I can't even handle how she was like, yes, come on in, like, by myself with someone who's losing it.
Right.
And then even when he pushes her up against and he's like, you need to lose your accent.
Yeah, and she's like, and obviously, you know, you're falling for it as a viewer, because that's what Kevin is seeing. She can't get rid of her accent, which kind of leads me to a point that I want to make, which is Kevin, there, he's not really a reliable person, or a narrator for us to really have our opinions judged, you know, or for our opinions to judge our opinions by, because we go through the international assassin, and that's all in Kevin's head. We have not Evie, right? Then we have Kevin Sr. walking around saying he's going to prevent a flood, and he's going on the song line.
Love it.
And then they're seeing each other, and it brings into question what Kevin really sees. Either Kevin. Like, Kevin Jr. is seeing his dad on television. Did that really happen?
Yes.
Do you think?
Yes. I think that happened.
I don't know. I'm not saying that it didn't.
Okay. While you're talking about Not Evie,
mm-hmm.
James Lattimore said, Not Evie told Kevin that there is no family. And that's something that Meg said. That's something that the Guilty Remnant said. So do you want to delve into that little? You know what he was?
Not Evie is getting information from Lori. So Lori is telling Not Evie to say that. So it would just get him on the way. It would get him out of that room with this poor, helpless girl. He's all bloodied and bashed.
Security.
Lori is feeding this information like she feeds the information to John when he's doing his Facebook Live thing. Not Facebook Live, just Facebook thing. and speaking to these people, she's just feeding the same information to her to get that across to Kevin, just to get him out of the room.
Is this the last you think we'll see of Evie?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think so.
Do you still think you might see Meg?
Oh, God, I really hope so.
I think we're going to go back to a hotel. I think Grace is going to kill Kevin Jr. Look at me. I'm just giving out my theories. I think Grace is somehow going to try to kill Kevin Jr., and I think he's going to bump into Meg.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Wouldn't it be cool if Meg didn't know who he was, and he went in there and was like, Meg, what's going on? Like, what are we doing here? And kind of like how he ran into Virgil in the hotel last mm-hmm. season, and Virgil's like, I don't mm-hmm. know you, bro. But I would love, or if Meg played it off like, I don't know you, but she actually did, and she did something to him in the hotel. Oh, that'd be a great way to bring her back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, to have her screw with him in the hotel.
I would agree. That's what I'm hoping. Now, I loved how Lori really hit it home with Kevin after this whole thing with Evie happened. She's on the phone, and she said, how is your relationship with Nora? Like, what is going on with you? You are the chief of police. The end of the world, kind of, is happening in, 6 days or so?
Yeah, and I like how they keep giving this timeline, by the way. They keep letting you know we only got this much time left. Mm-hmm. So they're definitely playing with our expectations. As each episode goes along, the timeline it's still clicking, and they're letting you know we're still behind the judgment day, you know, coming, apparently.
So she's, you know, after him, like, what's going on? How's everything with you and Nora? And that's when it finally hit home with him. And I love that it took his ex to tell him, honey, I don't think you're in a good relationship right now. Things are not great in Wonderland.
I mean, are we really going to be surprised that things have transpired the way they have with Nora and Kevin?
This whole season has been a terrible, toxic, codependent relationship.
Kidding. Nora was not kidding when she said that.
No, she was like, telling the truth, truth bombs, throwing truth bombs left and right. That's Nora. From Honey Badger to truth bomb slayer.
So I think, you know, that was one of the great things that this episode had accomplished too, which was playing with Nora here a little bit and playing with that kind of passive aggressive way about her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when she's talking about the crazy codependent relationship, does she really mean that?
Yes.
And I think she does, but you as the viewer, does Kevin believe that she means that? Or does he think that, oh, she's just playing it off?
Well, you know, especially like in the first episode of the season, you got to see her just be like, you know, joking about the Book of Kevin. You know, she's a very sarcastic, and she's become, I feel like, even more sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
And this season, but no, that was totally a truth bomb. And poor Kevin. I mean, he's going down the escalator looking for her, and he's like, yo,
what are we doing here?
What's going on?
What are you smuggling?
Because you couldn't wait 5 minutes with me.
Mm-hmm.
I love how she didn't even give him a warning. Like, that was kind of a dick move.
Oh, I know. And that's the thing. That's what's happening here. Because I've always said this, and I've joked, and I've kind of half joked that Nora is TV's best girlfriend. But their relationship, I think since day one, has been one where we've always thought, oh, they're going to be truthful with each other. They're going to be honest. They're going to be, Nora can handle it. She's going to listen. But then you start thinking about it, right?
This is you, Blake. You need to use your pronoun or your name.
Sorry.
I start thinking about it.
But then you start looking at their relationship from an unbiased perspective. First, Kevin admit that he cheated on his wife. And she is getting divorced when they first meet. And that's how their relationship kind of begins. That's not on the best of terms. And then she's ready to break up with Kevin right when she found Lily. But that's the only reason why she stayed with Kevin.
So I called it back in season one when I related this to Speed. Remember the movie Speed with Sandra Bullock?
Yes.
And is it she or the guy who says, like, no good relationship can come out of a situation like this?
Right.
And I remember I said, this is going to be like Speed.
Right.
It's not going to work out.
And you're 100% right, because, you know, they do all the things that they do in a relationship, but they don't share what they live. They don't share their innermost problems. I mean, they talked about Patty. They talked about, like, the weirdness, and there is weirdness of, like, Kevin, you know, putting a bag over his head. And, you know, Nora did cop to the fact that she had hookers, you know, shoot her.
Yes.
But think of this. Nora buys the house in Jarden, just spends all the money that she got from the scientists who bought her house. And then Kevin decides, screw it, bro. I'm drinking poison. And never tells anybody, doesn't even tell Nora about the book. She just finds out on her own that Matt is writing. And then, not only that, Nora straps $20,000 to her stomach without telling Kevin, without telling them why they're going, lying to him about the fact that, well, she didn't lie, but she didn't say.
She just hid the truth.
Yeah, she didn't say. She didn't tell the truth. She was just like, yeah, I got to go to Australia. And we're going to take $20,000.
Fun fact, $20,000 is how much Kevin Sr. left Matt in season one.
Oh, very good fun fact there. Look at you.
Yeah, I was like, I've heard this number before.
But then we have the whole issue with them going through the TSA, like you said. Like,
she's
just, and she's happy. She's, like, smiling the entire time.
I felt like she was just going to stare at him, give him the peace sign, say, sucka.
Later. See, and she says to him, see you on the other side. Later, you know, like, going down the escalator alone, just so much passive aggressive. And she finally catches him up when she's on the plane. Mm-hmm. But it takes that long for that to happen.
No, they catch up in the airport still when
I'm saying they catch up, like, the story.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yes,
they catch up, like, she catches him up on why she did it. And he's like, why didn't you just give me $10,000? We could have split. Because she's not thinking about him.
No.
She doesn't care about him. It's
not a good girlfriend.
And, you know,
honey badger.
There's a lot of things that I've wanted to try in my life, but I think having sex in an airport bathroom is not one of them.
What kind of airport bathroom was that?
I don't know.
It's because you don't change diapers in a lot of public bathrooms. That, my friend, was the family room. It was covered in storks.
Okay. Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. There was, like, a baby sign to show, like, that this is where you can change your baby.
Yes, it was coming in and out of focus.
So Nora's pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you think so? They keep
Nora's,
referring to pregnancy.
Well, Nora's pregnant. The amount of times that they have talked about her getting pregnant, or she has gotten pregnant, like, now. I mean, it's out of control. The fact that with the whole, are you carrying an infant, then holding a baby in this episode, and Kevin asking for the baby. I mean, they've dropped so much pregnancy language. And then for them to be having sex on, like, in this bathroom of all bathrooms, and they actually had a shot, like, this little blurry shot of the changing table, like, the baby logo.
Yep.
It's like, you're getting pregnant right now.
And her name is Sarah. Sarah, who had a baby when she was 90, in the Bible, as we had already mentioned earlier in earlier episodes. I mean, it's certainly possible.
And you can't get pregnant with an IUD. I know some people might be saying, what, how? It's very, 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 very rare, but it can happen. Mm-hmm. There's actually a great viral picture going around right now with a birth announcement with a baby next to its mother's IUD. You know, But, you know, especially with their throwing in so much about faith. I mean, Virgin Mary getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. I do not think Nora is the Virgin Mary. I think the Yubel Sid.
No, she...
So, but I really think that they have dropped so many sprinklings of pregnancy that something will be addressed.
Another thing that I really liked, too, that they played with was, again, Nora's intent on going to Australia and meeting with these scientists. It's not that it was obvious that she was going to just do a sting. She's telling Kevin that. But it seems fairly obvious that she's really going there to be with her kids. Like, she would really truly leave Kevin behind if she really meant to be with her kids
That's
again.
That's why Kevin went. Kevin knows. Girlfriend's unhinged.
She is... We talk about Kevin being crazy.
I feel like we've wrapped up much of Kevin. Is there any other major point that you want of Kevin? Because aside from seeing Evie, I think he acted pretty rationally. And he looks like a hot mess.
Yes.
Poor thing. He needs a beard comb. He needs a shower. He's in a hotel, so he's probably bugging out because the last time he was in a hotel, he was dead. And I even loved how they showed him going into the closet of the hotel and like touching the hangers. And I was like, man, everything in here is just like your hotel, but you're alive. And you don't like, did you open that closet to make sure there weren't police, you know, a whole set of different clothes items for you to wear?
Right, right.
Like, were you just pinching yourself? Like, let me just double check this.
Another thing, too, that I want to point out, too, is when Nora is sitting alone in the room right after Kevin leaves, the fire alarm comes on. And it's the same exact sound from International Assassin that the fire alarm makes. Mm-hmm. It's the same exact alarm. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, it's a big deal. But, I mean, it's another cool connection that they're sitting in a hotel in Australia, fire alarm's going off, something's burning, the book of Kevin is burning outside, just like there was a bed burning in International Assassin. The same exact fire alarm comes up. Really cool connections. Really cool connections.
Right. How did you feel about him telling the person who, concierge, please put my name on it, Garvey?
You know, I wish I had something revelatory to say about this, but it just shows you Kevin's identity and Nora's identity and how Nora kind of overpowers Kevin.
Okay.
You know,
I thought like maybe they had to put that in there because Kevin Sr. at the end was like, oh, I was looking at different hotels and calling around and we found you.
Oh, that's possible.
So I didn't know if we needed to have that in there.
Certainly possible.
It would make sense that Kevin Sr. found him by calling hotels.
Right.
But I don't know. I just feel like I would have figured both of their names were in the hotel anyway.
Right. And he just happened to see Kevin on TV.
Yeah.
I think that is a little bit of a... extraordinary.
That's
a little bit of an extraordinary circumstance.
People watch TV a lot. People watch. If you are home,
does Kevin Sr. feel like the guy that is the kind of guy that watches Good Morning America? Good Day Melbourne.
He and Grace had a good morning themselves. They had a good day Melbourne. And after, when they were eating some Raisin Bran, they turned on Good Day Melbourne and said, "Yes,
he's got a Good Day Melbourne in his pants for Grace."
Stop. Oh my gosh. And I totally believe we would have saw him. It seems like it was the Today Show, and a lot of people watch the Today Show. So I'm 100% okay with him watching Good Day Melbourne.
Okay.
Okay, Nora. So I think she's pregnant.
Do you think that's why they didn't accept her?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you think they didn't accept her?
It was her answer for the baby thing.
See, I felt like the scientists, we obviously know the lady who was speaking Swedish, whatever the hell it was.
She was saying a lot of different languages.
She
it was a fusion.
She had zero interest in Nora, and she was blowing her off the entire time. So it almost felt like it was a losing cause for Nora, and they were almost bringing Nora in just to see what would happen. And I wonder if that's what they do. You know, I wonder if that's what they do in these experiments. They're just bringing people in and they're taking people that they choose, and they're running a giant experiment, like a social experiment. Okay. And what it takes for people in their grief. You know what I mean? Like,
so do you think any of those people actually went, the 119 people?
Oh, boy. Well, Nora did say that all the people did disappear.
Okay.
And that there was no trace of them left behind.
So what if this is like a test to see if you kill yourself after? To see if you give up or if you keep trying to fight for it. And if you say, I'm not going to take no for an answer. I'm dedicated to this.
Oh, man, that would be
and
tough.
Find them.
That's kind of morbid. I mean, to put... It's not a stretch.
Will you kill yourself, but will you fight for this? I mean, will you keep finding these people? Like at the end, Nora was like, I'm going to find them. I am going to make them pay. Like, no, Nora's going to say, please let me in. Please let me do this.
Well, she even says that to them. She's like, oh, is this what you do? You make me beg to give you my money. And they're like, no, we don't even want it. And what I'm saying by that being kind of morbid is like, you know, they get these people who are kind of questionable to begin with. And then they finally get them to the point where they're like, okay, I'm okay with maybe dying. And then they're like, nope, sorry.
Was it because she was pregnant?
Well, they got her blood.
Yeah.
They took the blood from her.
Yeah.
And I don't think that is a coincidence. I really don't. I mean, they even mentioned the word pregnancy.
Yeah. And she jokes. Yeah.
You know, but for her...
Do you think that's why they didn't let her in? Because she's pregnant?
I think it's very possible. Another idea that I have, too, is you did mention the question, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Remember the guy who burned himself in the previous episode?
He said he wouldn't kill a baby.
He would, and now we definitely know that this guy is connected to the Finnish,
yes,
to the Finns scientists,
to the microwave people,
to the microwave. Okay, that's a great one. To the microwave people, we know that he's now connected. We know that they didn't accept him, and
yes,
he gave the answer of no, I will not kill the baby. Nora gives the opposite answer, and yet they tell her, sorry, you're not in either. So the guy kills himself and burns himself alive in the middle of Australian desert because he says no. They then tell Nora no because she says yes. And here's the thing. I don't think yes or no is the correct answer. And this reminds me, and I think this is why people are thinking that they're a guilty remnant. Because in my eyes, the scientists believe in science.
Yes.
They believe in what is quantifiable. And what is quantifiable isn't necessarily love. It's not relationships. It's not human connection. What's quantifiable is what is right and what is wrong and what is in between. And what really matters is if you're going to go to this place, nothing matters. It doesn't matter if you cure cancer. It doesn't matter if you kill a baby. The answer, in my eyes, kind of like the guilty remnant, is mm-hmm. nothing matters. Stop wasting your breath.
Yes.
The answer is, it doesn't even matter. I don't even give a shit.
I think that answer would have got her in. Mm-hmm. I also think that, I don't know, I kind of thought it was weird that they were asking it being twins, like identical twins, okay. And, well, how do you know you're killing the right baby? Mm-hmm. So maybe if she was just like, yeah, whatever, kill babies. Like, I don't want to be here. I want to be with my, like, maybe they were looking for people to say, I don't care. Babies, cancer, whatever. I care about seeing my loved one.
Yes.
I don't care about Earth. I don't care about these people. I want that one person, those three people, whoever departed, that is all I care about. So whatever. So I agree with you. Like, maybe if she gave the, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
answer, then maybe she would have been let in.
I think it's possible. I certainly think it's possible. And that is what draws me to the scientists. That's what draws me to this entire notion of what they're trying to do. Because as the viewer, you're thinking, oh yeah, well, Nora's going to say yes, and she's going to get in, and then she's going to get microwaved, and that's why we're going to see not Nora in the future look all old and, mm-hmm. and haggard because she got microwaved. But then again, the writers are now playing with your expectations in a brilliant way that I think that only the leftovers can manage.
How stinky must that interview have been with the sardine eating lady?
Oh my, like who, like what
ew.
The hell? Like,
ugh. I'm just going to be weird and creepy and talk half the time so you can understand me and half the time not, and then eat sardines in front of you with my fingers and then play with like a pen that maybe I'll just like let the other girl touch because it's sardine pen now. I don't care. Yeah. Whatevs, because I'm a honey badger too. And I love how they just leave. They just leave. They pat. They just
They're like, yep, later. Gotta
done.
Go, bro.
Bye. Out.
See ya.
So that was crazy.
Can we talk about the argument?
Yes.
The argument.
Yes.
And this was the... This is when Sackheim made his bones, I mean, really well. I mean, he did obviously a great job, and the Gavi's at their best. And I'm not even going to question that. But he really made his bones in this episode with this argument. I mean, with the visceral nature of it and how tough it must have been. I mean, for the characters themselves, yes, but also for the actors. Mm-hmm. And then moving in and out of their lines of sight and having the hand held. And as the actors come closer or move farther away, they're focusing and defocusing in the camera lens. And you are right there in their emotions with them, as you know, when you're mad at me and mm-hmm. and you just see red and you kind of lose focus and you just
I don't see red.
Well, you know what I
is
mean?
Is that what happens when you get mad at me?
Well, not literally, but you just see red like a bull. Like you lose focus. You get so angry.
I just get loud.
You get so angry. You get so loud that you can't even... Like, you can't even, like, focus on what's happening. That is what I felt. That's what I felt mm-hmm. with this argument. And the argument, essentially, was about what they can't say to each other. Right? What they've held everything back from each mm-hmm. other. Like we said, I have always thought that Kevin and Nora could be upfront with each other.
They haven't been.
But they haven't been. And this is when it all boils over.
No, but you know what's crazy? They have this crazy argument, and she still won't admit, mm-hmm. I am desperately trying to see my children. Now, they get the Lily stuff off their chest, which is huge.
Oh, when Kevin says, would you give up that other kid, too, if we had another baby? Ooh, man. And she has... This reminded me of The Godfather Part 2. I'm sorry, Part 1. When... Kay is telling Michael, spoiler alert, that I didn't lose the baby. I had it aborted. And you see Al Pacino's lips, his bottom lip and his chin just kind of quiver because he has this eyes like is just wide open and lip is quivering and you're just seething with anger. Ugh. And that is exactly what Carrie Coon had going on with Kevin at that time.
She burns his book. And I love how he's like, he burns his book.
Right.
He's saying, I've read it cover to cover 5 times. It's riveting. But then he burns it. I didn't understand fully, but maybe that's the seeing red part.
That's seeing red because it doesn't even matter at that point.
Yeah.
I don't even give a shit about the book. Oh, sorry. I'm on Facebook Live. I don't even care about the book. It doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is the fact that we have to talk. But fine. We don't have to talk about anything. The book is now gone and he lights it on fire. And as that thing is burning, they are burning. Oh man, smoke is coming up, and it's lit by her lighter that she used to
her little cigarettes for her and cigarettes foil
to burn up the image that Kevin has of himself, of the potential Messiah. You know, like, oh man, that was so freaking good.
Kevin leaves, mm-hmm. and she is left with the smoke, the fire extinguishers coming on.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, the lights go out. She's sitting there sobbing. And then what was great was the extra water dripping down her face in those close shots just made even more tears. It's like all the crying that we wish Nora had done throughout all these seasons mm-hmm. just came. But once again, I thought about the season opener.
Okay.
And that mother... alone on the top of her roof in the rain and just drenched mm-hmm. alone, has lost her kids, has lost her man, and still she goes back to lie with the bodies in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, this was mirroring that you've hit rock bottom. You are alone. You are cleansed of everybody else, but you're still going to, like, I still think Nora's going to go after these people.
Mm-hmm.
Nora's still got her own agenda.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, you can see it. She's like, I'm going to get them. I'm going to take them, those effers down. And she has her agenda. That's what she is going to end up doing. And it makes you wonder if they're still going to be together, Nora and Kevin, or have we seen the last of Nora and Kevin? Particularly because we know what Nora, not Nora, says to this lady at the church in the beginning episode. Do you know Kevin? Does the name Kevin mean anything to you? And she says, no. And she walks away. So
I don't know if we're ever going to see them together again.
I don't know.
I'd be okay with that. I really would.
But I really, I felt that this argument, if even if it was the last time they see each other or the last time they really have any kind of relationship,
yeah,
it really worked. The whole thing worked for me.
Well, Nora needs to be a non-believer. So unless Nora sees something that supernatural, magical, out of this world happens with Kevin, I don't know. I don't know what she could be doing with him. And I really think that that was what was so amazing is Kevin just kind of rolls with the punches of this supernatural stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not overanalyzing it. He sees Evie in the TV and he goes for it and he believes it wholeheartedly. And Nora's whole job is to not believe in this.
But
she tries to,
yeah,
she's still tentative.
Well, that's what I was just about to say that. I really truly believe they want to have each other's backs.
Yes.
I really truly believe they want to be there for each other. But there's just now so much that has happened. And there's so much that they've gone through that they're speaking different love languages.
That they are.
But they just don't know how to communicate to each other anymore. And that's the funny thing. And that's where I think the writers are tipping their hand a little bit because they play that song, Take On Me.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, another fantastic use of an 80s pop song.
Especially in the library scene when it was the shot from above and it just looked so beautiful. And it was like a horn.
Yeah, the horn.
Brass.
Right.
Version of it.
They played three versions. The first one was the piano version. The second one was the horn and brass. And then the third was the real version from Aha. And I feel like, you know, like the video, if you remember the video from Take On Me, it was this lady who's reading a book in a diner. And the only reason why I know this is because my sisters were MTV freaks and I watched it with them because I was, you know, a loser who tried to play with his sisters while they ignored him. You know, it was about a lady in a diner and she was reading a book, like a comic,
yeah,
and a hand comes up out of the comic and pulls
Ew.
Her into it.
Yeah.
And it was actually quite a revolutionary video at the time.
Yes.
Because it was animating comics with people at the same time.
Kind of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes, exactly. But, and the thing I that always creeped me out about that video, mm-hmm, was the guy who's singing the song is the guy who pulls the lady into the comic.
Yeah.
And when he looks at her, he sees her as a comic. And when she looks at him in the mirror, she sees him as a comic, and they run away from a guy, and then eventually they meet up in the real world. And I think it's pertinent what they're trying to say here with this song, because one of the lyrics to it is, "You're shying away, I'm coming for you anyway. Take on me, take me on." And I really feel like that Kevin and Nora, they're trying to take each other on. They're trying to become one. They're trying to meet each other in the middle. And maybe this book is pulling them in and pushing them apart. But that's why I'm saying I really feel like they want to be together. They really want to back each other up. They just don't know how yet. And it would be a little sad if...
For you.
It would be... Yes, it would be a little sad for me. It would be a little sad. But that final scene of Nora just sitting there with the water on her eyes.
You know who else is going to have a big breakup pretty soon?
Who?
Lori and John. That's not going to end well.
And then we talk about this explosion. The taxis aren't available. The guy at the taxi stand says to Kevin, "Didn't you see the news?" Oh, no. Kevin Sr. says that to Kevin Jr. "Didn't you see the news? All the planes are grounded."
Wasn't that guy who was from the airport with his crazy suit? Remember that guy who, they wouldn't let through security?
Oh, yeah. What about him?
Remember? He was like, "No, I need to go. I need my suit. It's going to happen."
Maybe he wasn't wrong. Maybe there was a giant explosion somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right.
You ready for the listener feedback?
Feedback.
Right, at the Gearson on Twitter says, "I'll give it 5 Damons. The soundtrack was very different from anything I've seen on The Leftovers. I loved it. And also, weirdly enough, I started to think that Kevin and Nora can be good for each other. They finally just actually have to talk to each other.
Damage is done, I think.
At the Garrison, you and I are on the same page here. We're on the same freaking page.
Claudia M. tweeted, 5 Damons because I'm a glutton for existential torment, and I think that Carrie Coon is the most incredible actor. What? I was trying to be dramatic, and I'm exhausted. Anyway, Daphne Mack on Facebook said, for me, The Leftovers is a perfect example of what can happen during the loss of a loved one, especially when it's sudden. Your mind can spiral out of control and can create scenarios, sometimes monster, in order to cope. Here's another burning thought that Daphne's had for a little while.
Okay.
Lori is the thread throughout all of the stories. She's the one character that has gone through every phase of loss and interacted with all of the storylines. She interacted with Patty as a therapist. She was in a dead-end relationship, almost a dog. Can't remember her name. Died by stoning. Almost got a dog. She had her unborn
child. Mom hair died by stoning.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Mom hair. Oh, R.I.P.
Gladys.
She had her unborn child departed.
Yes.
She joined a cult. She joined the EGR. And now she's a therapist / con artist in Miracle. Miracle. Nora even said to Kevin, oh, you called Lori. So what if this is Lori's book? Or maybe I have lost my mind due to overwatching this show.
Oh, Daphne Mack, what a freaking awesome idea. If this was Lori's book, writing a book about Kevin, not necessarily a Bible, you know, canon type thing, but just her book talking. And that would be why she was writing books, and they brought that into the second season and she freaks out. And now she's writing. Oh, my God. What a cool meta commentary on the show. If that were the case. Oh,
Michaela Wash says, I loved it first for the episode itself, but then as a native Melbourneian, I got a real kick out of seeing the streets. Federation Square, Hosier Lane?
Sure.
Sure, I'm going to go for it. And the State Library. If only they would say Australia instead of Australia and Melbourne instead of Melbourne. Oh, no. I've been saying it wrong.
Me too.
Melbourne.
No, listen, I'm from Boston. We say things how we want to say them.
Melbourne. That's just how it goes. G'day, Melbourne. There we go. G'day, Melbourne.
And we're not talking about...
G'day, Melbourne. Oh my God, I just did it. G'day, Melbourne.
And we're not talking about Kevin Senior's G'day, Melbourne. I'll tell you that.
Okay, so John J. Adair gave it 5 Damons. After the brutal breakup, it seems as though the reason future Nora, a.k.a. not Nora, but... is Nora, Sarah, says the name Kevin doesn't mean anything to her is because he is dead to me.
Ooh,
that's
yeah.
Right. That's what breakups do.
Wade Buonadonna says, the guy who lit himself on fire said no to killing one of the twins, and they didn't send him through either. And why didn't she ask about the process if the radiation cremates them? And who eats sardines? Who eats them like that? Was Kevin nuts when he was seeing Patty, or nuts how when he was seeing Evie? If he was nuts and the entire Patty thing was in his head, what was the last season about? What was the assassin about? Why go after Nora to turn her down? No answers, no direction with 4 episodes left. All we know is that Nora will be riding a bike in the future, and she changed her name.
It's okay, Wade. It's okay. Steve Wargo. Blake, calm yourself.
I'm banging my head against the microphone because...
Who eats sardines? I don't know, Wade.
That assertion and that whole thing is...
Be kind, Blake.
Okay,
people have their own opinions. Steve Wargo, I'm cutting you off.
Oh, man. I'm ready to crack, baby.
Steve Wargo says, there's really no point in the episode. Nothing happened to move the storyline along. That couldn't have been done in 5 minutes. Par for the course so far this season. I'm going to keep going so that Blake isn't rude.
Oh, my
Scott
goodness.
Scott
Duvall
says,
freaking
Burning
gracious.
Man... and Nora gave different answers, but both were denied access. I think what's going on is there's more than Nora's theory that they were onto her. If it were really a scam, then they would take everyone's money. I'm wondering if this is the obverse of what Lori does. They aim to make people confront the loss they suffered, just like the guilty remnant. But why? I don't know. I think MLB is part of it.
Oh, yes. John Champion says, five Damons. Pretty much every episode in my eyes, of course, is five Damons. I predicted that Kevin and Nora would break up from this week's opening title song. I feel exhausted after having watched this episode when Kevin said that Nora couldn't have another child because she would no longer be a victim. My jaw hit the floor. And Greg Cuoco says, still sticking with four Damons, a very emotional episode. Kevin and Nora seem to have come to an end with... both of them reaching their own boiling point. The message of Surah chapter 81 may hold information on what is to come, as many of its contents relate to the storyline. Kevin was looking for more crazy, and Nora more and more desperate. No good answer to the baby question. It seems there is more going on here with the scientists than we think. And Kevin seems to be the main focus again as we struggle to figure out if he is indeed having a mental breakdown, or is he being carefully guided by seeing a vision of Evie, who leads him to be on TV for his dad, Kevin Sr., to locate?
I dig that. I dig that, because otherwise Kevin Sr. wouldn't have found him if he didn't just randomly go to, good day, Melbourne.
Oh my God, that is so... Because Kevin Sr. is talking about all these signs and everything, and if oh my God, if that really was a sign, oh my God, that'd be so freaking cool. Thomas K. Tyler says, I'm going to have to find out what happened to my room that made the sprinklers go off.
Oh dear.
Because what else would attribute to all the water running down my face, just like it was Nora's at the end of the episode? I also loved how Grace and Kevin Sr. totally pulled the Doc Brown and grabbed Kevin Jr. to go back to the International Assassin Hotel. All they needed were the white lab coats and for the flames to shoot out of the tires of Grace's Outback DeLorean as they sped off.
Oh. He said, on a more serious note, this episode was everything I love about The Leftovers and then some, but only 4 hours left. That's right, guys. 4 hours they're going to wrap up this show, and I can't wait to see where they take us.
Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
Sorry.
Sudden theory of the week, Blake. Let's do it.
Oh, no, we have a couple of voicemails.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's get to the
you
voicemails.
You didn't have them in the Google.
I didn't, sorry.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Chris. I'm calling you guys from Southern California. Big fan of the show.
Yay, thanks.
Pretty excited about this new season of Leftovers. I just thought I would comment on something. I'm listening to the episode 4, episode 303, Crazy White Fellow Thinking, and I just got to take issue with... Blake's unfair Damons.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think that it's hard to say that this episode is not needed, or we don't need to spend a whole hour with Kevin Sr. if we don't know what the end game for this entire season is going to be.
Nice.
So, you know, I would think that we don't really know whether or not we can say it's worth a whole episode unless we know, you know, how it's going to play into the larger story. In fact, he just, you know, had apologized that you were wrong in your initial assessment of episode 2, in that we didn't, you know, that the killing of Soggy Kevin was kind of out of place in that episode. So, you know, I would just say, you know, let's wait and see how this whole thing plays out. And then, you know, I'm kind of trusting Damon and company to go ahead and stick the landing. And, you know, we'll see in the end whether or not this was, you know, a waste of an episode or not a waste of an episode, but, you know, whether or not it was worth it to spend a whole episode with Kevin Sr. So I think ultimately we're going to be getting into some pretty crazy stuff pretty quickly here, and I can't wait to see what that is. All right, love you guys. Keep up the great work. Love the show. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. In my defense, I will say it wasn't a wasted episode. I just said I wasn't sure if we needed to spend an entire episode with Kevin Sr. Just in my defense.
Okay.
In my defense.
Hey, Mary and Blake. It's Preston from Montgomery, Alabama.
Hey, Preston.
Calling to say, what the heck did we just watch?
Amazingness.
I really enjoyed Good Day, Melbourne. It was wacky as heck. I'm just sitting here like, Nora, you play in yourself. I just don't understand. I think Nora is totally kidding herself. I don't think she's being honest with Kevin A, which is obvious, but she's not being honest with herself either. I think she really does want to get out. You know, Nora, she has nothing really keeping her anywhere. And when she goes to lay on all the packing peanuts, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, there's a reason that Nora hasn't just killed herself. She really wants for her children to either come back or just to get to them. I feel like that's why Nora has stuck around, and I think she's lying to herself when she says that, you know, she's just going to out these guys as scammers. I think she's totally kidding herself. I think she wants to get out, go to the other side, and I think that this whole episode from Nora's storyline was just a metaphor for her relationship with Kevin. She keeps putting him on the back burner. She's not honest with him. And no, he's not honest with her either, but she really is, you know, treating Kevin like an afterthought. And that's why when the scientist ladies say, oh yeah, we know all about Kevin, we're not worried about him, because they know that that relationship is not where it needs to be. And, you know, they don't take him any more seriously than Nora herself does. And so I just found the whole episode to be really good. And it's about time that we dealt with the elephant in the room, that is Kevin and Nora probably not working. I will say that I think maybe Kevin's ultimate mystical goal is to save Nora from possibly herself, or from going to the other side, or what the heck ever. But I think that it's all come together, man. So give it all the Damons, and I'll see you on the other side.
Hey, Preston. Preston is actually watching live. Thank you for watching and listening to us at the same time. And Preston also has this great YouTube channel where he does recaps of the show. So please search out Preston Young on YouTube, and he's amazing. He does a great job. He actually probably says it much more efficiently and much more succinctly and eloquently than I ever could. So please listen to him.
Aren't efficient and succinct pretty much the same thing?
Yes. Sure. Exactly, so why Preston would be better than me. So there's another thing too, I wanted to mention here as well. Sherry Shannon also claimed, sorry, Mary's playing with our cat and it totally distracted me.
Khaleesi.
Our cat Khaleesi, that's right. Sherry Shannon says on Facebook, the crazier Kevin gets, the hotter he is. Now, Spunky misunderstood genius.
Yes.
Is this, in terms of a woman, do you really find this to be true? Do you really think that the crazier he gets, the hotter he is?
No.
You know, because you're not into the bad boy.
A bad boy.
Well, into like the dangerous boy. Because okay. Kevin's dangerous.
So I'm more of a Justin Trudeau rather than a Justin Thoreau kind of girl. Not going to lie.
Oh, my. Bam. Just like that. The fact that you even rhymed it was awesome.
Occasionally I have to catch myself when I'm just saying Justin Thoreau because I want to say Justin Trudeau.
Oh my goodness gracious.
He would not be able to pull off this role, so I'm very thankful for Justin Thoreau.
Oh my goodness.
But I bet a lot of people find him to be hotter as he gets angry and hairier. I bet. I mean, he is a very fine specimen. He's a very attractive man. I agree.
Wait, Jennifer Aniston, like we've always said, is a lucky gal.
Amen.
A lucky gal. All right. Do you got anything for us for your sudden theory of the week? Anything left?
I already gave them all away.
Okay, you already gave it all. Okay. All right. Ultimately, my theory of the week is that everything the show is pointing to, whether it's songs or people's characterizations or even lines in the show, Kevin is going to die. He has to die by show's end. And I don't think it's coincidence.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think it's coincidence that Matt is saying you can die, but you can't die in Miracle. And now he's outside of Miracle. Another thing, too, while Kevin and Nora were in Miracle, their relationship, even though it was kind of screwed up, we all know it, they were still in a relationship. They still were together. Now they're outside of Miracle, and their relationship is now gone. It's over.
Bye.
That, to me, screams Kevin has to die. And Kevin has to die by show's end because he killed Patty. They're talking about babies.
She didn't really kill Patty. She killed herself.
But you know what I mean. Like pretend in Patty. International assassin.
Little girl international assassin.
And
Patty.
And Kevin Sr. was saying, you're not an assassin. Don't kill her. You got to take her to the well. And here he does it. And I feel like Kevin is going to die. So
hopefully Grace doesn't do it. I hate Grace.
That liar. We were actually talking about that we were at the Rhode Island Philharmonic the other day, and we were talking about Grace, and we were saying how that she definitely is a liar. And I don't think,
why was she going through the kid's shoes?
Because she was looking for, because it was donation bags, if you remember.
Yes.
And she was going through the donation bags, maybe because she donated all the clothing to get, like.
But she was, like, going through the shoes looking for certain sizes. But they were kids' shoes.
Yeah, no, but you know how, like, when you write. Creepy. If you write Reese's name on stuff.
Yeah.
Like, to let them, other people know that it's his crap, so don't touch it. Maybe she wrote her kids' names on their shoes, and maybe she wants all of it back.
Crazy.
Because originally she thought that she was giving him the gut. Whatever, doesn't really matter. But that is my sudden theory of the week. That
okay.
Kevin has to die by the end of this Good. Season.
Please hang up and try again.
Final thoughts, my darling. What do you got?
It was a great episode, and I can't wait for episode 5. And this show is amazing.
Yes,
period.
It is. I this episode to me proved how The Leftovers has went to every other television show's like doorstep that is in Hollywood or whatever, and just left a giant
steaming
pile of poop on their doorstep.
Okay, you just did that.
And lit it on fire because it is smoking everybody, except perhaps maybe the Americans. I think the Americans could stand up to The Leftovers.
I'm not watching the Americans right now.
No, you're not, but I'm just saying it could, and it's possible. Other than that,
you can only watch one depressing show at a time.
This show is clowning every other show that is out right now.
Speaking of clowning, you want to know who's in costume this episode?
Yes. Tell me.
Our very own Damon Lindelof was the koala with that Kevin asked directions from.
That's right.
Where do I get to the library? That was Damon.
So I just wanted to say that this show is just... It is totally smoking everybody else.
Yes.
Ready to close out the show, my darling?
Always.
Let's do it.
Four episodes to go, guys. So the way to communicate with us best, let's be real, it's Facebook and Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Our handles are Living Reminders. So it's facebook.com/Living Reminders and it's twitter.com/Living Reminders.
And if you want to catch us on the website, it is thelivingreminders.com. And if you need to leave us a lengthy message because either you hate us or you love us, either way, I want you to hate us to love us. Or, you know, love is great. But you know what? If we make you feel something like The Leftovers makes us feel, you can always reach us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Tell your friends about this show. And you know what? Tag Tom Parada and Damon Lindelof because they think 48 people watch the show. Just joking, but they kind of joked that. How many?
She's pulling a Nora there where she was being serious but not being serious.
But like, they need to know. You need to tweet them. You need to Facebook like them. You need to let them know, I love this show. It is amazing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know,
this make us feel.
They do. And I don't know how else we're going to let them know.
Which can say a lot more than The Walking Dead can.
Truly.
That show. They're talking about a steaming pile of poop.
Until next time, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson. He's Blake. And we're still here.
We're still here.